Welcome back to Techish. Michael and Abadesi are off this week, but here is a recap of our favourite celebrity and business stories from recent episodes. Don't forget, let us know your thoughts on @TechishPod on socials.
So guess who? This person stars in a famous reality TV show. This person was married to one of the world's biggest hip-hop stars and potential US president candidate hopefuls.
Okay.
And is now worth $4 billion thanks to being the largest shareholder of fashion label starting with S.
This is Jocelyn. I'm just shout out to Kim K. Honestly, probably one of the greatest entrepreneurs of all time. I'm calling it right now.
Okay.
You know what? I'm calling it right now.
Wow. So okay. I'm sorry, Rihanna.
Okay. But listen, I'm going to say this, yeah, because Rihanna can sing.
Yes.
Rihanna has talent.
She does.
Rihanna has star power. I've never seen someone take the starting position of Kim K and turn it into this. And the reason why I say she might go down as one of the greatest is because I don't think it's done yet. So Skims is raised $270 million. It's now valuing the company at $4 billion.
Damn.
The people who have put money into the company have said that we are trying to take this thing public. So there's a potentiality that in 10 years time, 20 years time, this is a $40-50 billion enterprise. Do you know what I'm saying? And I don't know how Ray J is feeling about this right now.
Where's my cut?
Ray J should have been like, I want cut? Equity from day one. But anyways, yeah, no, shout out to Kim. Like,
it's did anyone make money off those sex tapes?
No, they made a whole bunch of money.
Who owned the rights though?
They did. It was a myth that basically that like, it was leaked and, you know, cause there's in no world where you can release a sex tape without the permission of the person who's in the sex tape. Listen, they were very, very clever. Kim K and her mother, astute businesswoman. They monetized the hell out of that, turned that into a TV show, turned that into brands, turned that into an empire. And that's just probably a small percentage of the whole Kardashian-Jenner empire.
Wow. Can you think of any other entrepreneur or mogul whose career was launched in such questionable circumstances?
I mean, listen,
or
man.
Scandalous circumstances?
The Kennedys, you know, was all crime and blood and mafia. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
They say every great fortress starts with a crime. This wasn't even a crime. This was just, it was what it was. And it's ancient history.
Damn.
So, you know what I mean? Shout out to them. I'm not mad at it anymore. They've taken it to a level now where I'm like, this is talent and ingenuity.
Yeah.
Because like, if I put a sex tape out there, I ain't turning that into $4 billion.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, most people are like, not.
I think the genius of Skims having never purchased anything but seen their items hanging on the rack of Selfridges is that it's like a pure margin product. Like the quality of it to me is no better than other fast fashion brands.
Right.
I mean, I'm talking about the undergarment stuff, like the bras, the crops, not even just the shapewear, just like they just do other athleisure kind of things, leggings, tops. Again, I've never bought anything. The color range, popping. I'll give them that. Every skin tone, so, so cool. But the actual quality of the fabric, like when you touch it, I mean, I like to touch things before I buy them, is not giving what the price tag is reflecting.
Right.
So I feel like it's also a very profitable business.
Yeah, so the margin is obviously factoring in the brand of what she's built.
And fashion is, if you do it right, is a high margin business. I remember when I worked at Amazon, fashion was the most profitable by miles.
Wow, and it never took off though. People didn't want to spend on Amazon, did they?
Amazon fashion sells, bro.
It's nice to this day.
Yes.
Damn, to this day, I didn't know that.
It's just, you're just not the kind of person that buys your clothes on Amazon.
Listen, I got a Prime membership. If they give a man some Prime delivery and some Prime prestige clothing, I will be there. But no, what's I going to say? I think that's it really with Kim K, but shout out to a commendable top 10 entrepreneur.
Now, how do we contrast the rise of Skims with the demise of Yeezy?
I don't think we can contrast them. I think Yeezy's demise is all down to the self-sabotage of one individual who may or may not have you know, mental health issues, which is probably the cause of it. We mentioned off mic that Kanye was quite integral in terms of the aesthetic of the brand.
Absolutely.
The inspiration. I think he did put his creative director to help out the launch. And even in general, like, it was known that he was one to get Kim on her fashion game and to level up on that fashion game because he was really passionate about fashion from day.
Yeah.
Listen, man, that's marriage. You helped your partner out when you were married. You're no longer married. You have children. Hopefully that wealth trickles down to your children. So so you can't be mad at that.
I'm not mad at it.
And Yeezy probably will return. I genuinely think that, like, we're in a culture now that's so fast moving that in a year
Trump's running mate, 2024?
Exactly. Well, listen, if Trump can come back, maybe there might be an element of white privilege there. But I believe that in 2-3 years' time, unfortunately, Kanye probably will be back. And people still mess with him. His fans are still there.
Yeah.
He just lost distribution in Adidas and no corporation wants to touch him right now. So in 2-3 years' time, he does a little apology tour. Possibly. He said a lot of reprehensible things, but he is talented. And sometimes
you know what he should
care about his talent.
Convert to Judaism.
Maybe.
That's what he needs to do.
Maybe.
Like, really.
I mean, he did
really
a whole album called Jesus is King. I don't think he can go back and do that now. But anyways, listen, let's see. Listen, I wish nothing but the best for that man. I hope he gets better. But yeah, listen, she's down, he's up. The other thing I wanted to mention, actually, so this is a fascinating story. Have you heard of a guy called Keith Lee?
Keith Floyd, I have heard of.
So Keith Lee is a, I think he's a former fighter. I think he's a former MMA fighter. But he became a food reviewer.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's got like a 14 million followers.
What?
Basically, yeah, reviewing
Damn.
Food.
Respect.
And he has like saved businesses. So he's gone to like certain restaurants and like said, oh, this food is great, 10 out of 10. And that's made the business boom. People have queued up.
And the restaurant game is hard.
But what's happened now is that he decided to do a tour of Atlanta. So he's US based.
Okay.
And because he's so famous now, he often sends his family ahead of time to go to the restaurant and see how they're treated before how he gets treated.
Smart.
Yes, but what's happened is that like he has encountered many restaurants in Atlanta where his family is basically getting treated like shit. They are not getting served. Oh, it's an hour waiting time.
Yeah.
As soon as they see my man, it's like, yo, 5 minutes, we'll get you a table, whatever,
VIP.
Right? Yeah, so he's having these back and forths with a lot of these restaurants because he's leaving honest reviews. Has influencer culture gone too far now in a sense where like you're treating the normal people like dog shit, but as soon as the influencer walks in, oh my God, like what's going on? Like, how can we help you? And it's like, yo, just customer service for everyone. Why have I got to have a million followers for you to rate me?
Yeah. Do you know what? This is such a good point because I definitely think that there's a lot of layers to this issue. I think the first one is, of course, you're always going to give extra special service to who you think is a VIP. That's always been the case,
that's
right?
A shame.
There are times where, you know, you might have a critic in your restaurant or at your show and the word goes round like, okay, table 7, like be extra nice to them. I remember when I used to work in retail, we always used to be warned if there was like a secret shopper coming.
Mystery
like,
shopper, baby.
Mystery shopper. Like everyone, you know, act good, like act focused.
Yeah.
So I think to some degree, like that's always existed where you know that there's like your average performance and what you want to pretend is your average performance when you're being inspected is actually your extra special performance.
Right.
So I think there's an element of that. But I think in general, you know, we are in late stage capitalism. We are post pandemic. We are, you know, cost of living crisis, inflation, whatever you want to call it. And people who are often in a services role or hospitality role are sometimes some of the most squeezed people.
Mm.
So there's not a huge amount of like motivation and enthusiasm, I think, in a lot of those roles. Like
right.
A lot of people in hospitality, if that is their first job, they're like probably like super drained, like working overtime. And if it's their second job because they're like a aspiring XYZ, then they're probably like not super motivated. So I don't know. I think it's like a really hard one. Like I, of course, always want to get the best customer service. Here in the UK, sometimes I miss US customer service.
Yeah.
Like the fact that people are working for their personal tip, not something that they're going to share. I always really like feeling special as a customer. And I appreciate that that's not always the case in every restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
But in general, customer service in the US feels very different to customer service.
So you're saying
the
customer service in the US is better primarily because they're incentivized for tips, basically. Versus
I just feel like
here,
sometimes
we're
in
not.
The UK, you walk into a restaurant, especially like in like whatever cool areas where I hang out, you don't even know who works there.
No one gives a
like,
shit.
Like, everyone's literally just, like, dressed the same. Like, customer, staff. I'm like, who actually... Is that guy in the tattoos and the beanie? Does he work here? I don't even know who works here. And then when you finally get someone's attention, it's just, like, they don't even want
what
to look
want?
At you, let alone talk to you. And then as soon as the food comes out, it's like they're dropping the plate and they're running away before you go, excuse me.
Yeah.
Oh, we still don't have cutlery. Oh, no, that's cool. We'll just wait. So, I don't know. I do sometimes miss that American customer service. Even if it's saccharine, even if it's inauthentic, at least I can like participate in the fantasy that I'm special.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, yeah. You know what? I think businesses should treat everyone like they've got a million followers because you just don't know who does. If I had a restaurant, because right now I mentioned a person to you who's got 14 million followers. You've never ever heard of him.
No.
If I showed you a picture, you wouldn't know who he is.
Mm.
And there's right now, there's so many micro famous people who have like a million followers, 2 million followers that you wouldn't recognize. So as a business owner, just assume that everyone could be someone of notoriety right now because it's not as if like we live in a world where there's that macro famous person who everyone knows now, apart from like Taylor Swift. Beyonce and stuff like that. So yeah, be on your P's and Q's and just treat everyone like they could shut you down.
But here's the thing. I bet the owner of that business asks his team to treat everyone like they're a VIP. Right?
Possibly. I mean, I think
this is where processes fail us, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of people who are listening probably are managers or are business owners who have teams and they can't be there all the time and they can't watch all the time. And, you know, one of the things that I became obsessed with this year working on Hustle Crew was like our processes, because I was like, I can't always be in the room when training is happening, but I want to feel like everyone is bringing the same energy and commitment to the training as if I were there, as if I were doing it. And I think the only way that you can guarantee that is if you have processes that make people feel accountable, or if you're collecting the feedback and collecting the data. Like yeah. in my company, if you don't get 80% of respondents to complete data, then I will assume that everyone who didn't give feedback rated you zero. And that yeah. will be your score. But it's
you
hard.
Know, as a business owner, it's so difficult because Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett's business partner, says, show me the incentive, I'll show you the result.
I like it.
And like sometimes we're sitting here thinking, why wouldn't you be as enthusiastic as me? My employee, like it's like they're not incentivized to one. In the same way that you are as the owner of the company. So what are the incentives that we can put around it so that you have that same desire to like follow up on those leads like I would
yeah.
basically, right? Obviously, once you have the incentive sorted out and they're still not performing, obviously, then there's a really big macro issue.
Yeah.
But I think we've got to stop hoping that like, you know, everyone's going to be super enthusiastic for our little company. It's got to be like, yo, why should you care? Do you get what I'm saying? And that's what I struggled with as a business owner, to make sure that everyone is the kind of thing, because incentives are dangerous, because you can incentivize for the wrong thing.
Oh, definitely.
So for example, like, for my platform, I tell my team, like as a job board, we need to make sure there's lots of applications basically for our partners. So what is that incentive? If I say to them, you get a bonus if we get lots of applications, what they're going to do is just say like, let's just get anyone on the platform.
Yeah.
Who the hell cares basically, right? And then I have to be like, okay, no, it has to be applications, but quality applications. Yeah. So you figure it out as you go along.
So a better metric would be matches, successful matches.
Exactly. There we go. But yeah, shout out to Charlie Munger. Obviously, we called it 2 weeks ago, I think 2-3 episodes ago, like Beyoncé and Adidas wasn't really working out. And now it looks like they've officially parted ways. We spoke about last time how they were losing money and how reportedly she was getting paid $20 million a year, regardless of the success of the venture every year, per year.
Best
and
I think they woke up.
Best brand deal ever. Shout out to Beyoncé's management team, whoever organized that deal. You're a genius, yeah? And I think the finesse could only run so long. So I think it lasted 2-3 years. And she walked away with $60 million, basically, and never turned a profit, probably the whole thing never turned a profit, I would guess. Wow. Adidas have been burnt really on this whole celebrity endorsement.
But think of how many headlines they've got, like
marketing, yeah, marketing,
and also
dollars.
The cultural like cachet. Because let's be real, like let's just tap into blackness for a little bit.
Yeah, it's true.
Was Adidas flexing on the level of Nike? Like, think of the
Absolutely
Jordan
not.
Partnership and what that did for the brand in terms of just cementing its relevance. Yep. Like, you know what I mean? Like a pair of Jordans. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah, 100%.
Adidas never quite had that, or has that. You know, they've got the Yeezys. That, well, I mean, kind
they
of had the Yeezys.
Yeah.
Whatever. I think they were just looking for that. And even just the fact that it's being mentioned in the same sentence as Beyoncé, that's saying a lot. Like, people look at that brand differently now than these two. And I will include myself in that. Like, I've got like primo Adidas Stella McCartney kind of things I never would have right. thought before that I would get. Because over the last 10 years, I now kind of see it on a level that I didn't see it at before. So yes, right. on paper, it's not been a good investment. But this is the weird thing about marketing. The value that comes from marketing in many ways is also so transient,
ephemeral.
And intangible.
It's ephemeral.
Like, and I think about this all the time with my company, where I'm just like, marketing for me is like, where the new leads at? Where the new leads at? Where the new contract signed at? But then you find out like 6 months later, like a year later, someone's like, oh, I've been wanting to work with you since I saw that campaign or that thing. And now yeah. I finally have the budget. So it's a hard one. It's a hard one. Like, I feel like for me, even though I see the numbers, I feel like the jury is still out for me on whether this was a bad partnership for Adidas.
Yeah. You know, I can't speak on Adidas's kind of cultural position amongst kind of like black women. So maybe there is something that working with Beyoncé has done something. I don't know, ephemeral in terms of marketing positioning. I don't know. I definitely would say that their proximity to blackness, and specifically their proximity to Kanye, was revolutionary for their brand. Even though they might yes. lose a whole bunch of money this year and the next 2 years, it was still 1,000% worth it, because without Yeezy, without Kanye, yeah, Adidas was, you know, struggling behind Nike. I don't know about market cap and I don't know about, you know, P&L, but I can definitely say in terms of just cultural relevance, pre-Kanye was, and after Kanye was, two different stories.
Absolutely. Here's a question.
Go on.
If you could get any celebrity endorsement for people of color in tech, right? Do you know what? Recruitment. Let's talk about your jobs board. That's your main revenue stream, right? So yeah. if you could get any celebrity endorsement, like someone should just step up and be like,
Pocket Jobs is our like number one go-to whenever we're hiring. Who do you want that to be?
Put me on the spot. I don't know. I'm trying to think, who would that person be? I mean, there's people, if I thought about it for long enough, there are people who would make most sense commercially. But me as a CEO, as a, just a normal nerdy motherfucker, obviously I would love Jay-Z to throw us on the line one day and just be like, fuck it, Jobs, it's your boy.
It's your boy.
Oh. Jigo, it's your boy. Pocket Jobs.
P-O-C.
P-O-C-I-T. Jobs. Ah, oh, bro. I would die a death and be like, I'm so happy. That's why you take dinner with Jay-Z and you don't take the 500K. So you get that shout out and you get the marketing spin of $1 billion. Nah, you know what? That's what it is. But if I thought about it long enough, I'm sure there's a person who the position like would make more sense. Because obviously Pocket Jobs is probably target primarily at 25 to 40 professionals in tech,
yeah,
black people, POC. So who is that person that fits that most? I don't know. But from my perspective, obviously, as a nerd of, you know, of Jigga, I would be like, yeah, please. Like, that would be amazing. That would make me laugh. That would make me pretty happy. Who is your one? Who's your one? Who would you want?
So I am in two minds about this.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
If it, she's in that court case, Hustle Crew, because she got found not guilty. Case, she won the case. Yeah, I won the case. Shout out to Hustle Crew. If she said that, what would you do?
No, I'm in two minds about it because it's like, do I want to preach to the converted or the unconverted? Because if I want to preach to the converted, I would love to have someone like Brené Brown, who's like actually really inspiring to our work. Or, you know, like Simon Sinek, Scott Galloway, like one of those like super respected, like corporate speakers, like people that influence CEOs already, who could just kind of be like, and when I, as a CEO, think about who I want training my team, it's Hustle Crew.
It's Abedessi,
like,
yeah.
So on the one hand, I think that would be really dope. But then another part of me is just thinking like, or the most unexpected one, Joe Rogan. Wait for it, though. Wait for it, though, because the Joe Rogan celebrity endorsement would be like, I was skeptical. I was skeptical about
it's like Paul in the Bible. That's Saul in the Bible.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I was skeptical about implicit biases. I thought D&I training didn't work, but I took my team. The Joe Rogan team went along and now we're stronger than ever. Like, that would be so sick. Because also people would be like, what the fuck? But then they'd be like, I mean, if it's working for him, maybe I'll try. Because my business will never grow to the next level until the people who like don't see the problem that we're fixing as a problem see it as a problem.
You know what? I think the two people. So obviously you're trying to convince CEOs to hire you for training.
Yes.
I think it has to be Jeff Bezos and it has to be Elon, because those two are like the thought leaders of CEOs.
Yes.
So there's CEOs and there's the CEOs that everyone looks to for thought leadership. So if Jeff was to come in his new Amazon, you know, letter to the shareholders and was like, listen, this improved business performance by X%. Hustle Crew Abedessi. Yeah. Name check in the letter.
Yo.
Or that's it. Game change. That's
that
it. That's
deepfake
it.
Is coming tonight. I got no plans tonight. Let me get on that AI model builder. Just do my do a little 419 hustle over here. My Nigerian DNA so I can scam up. Grab some headlines with my Jeff Bezos deepfake.
A clip has resurfaced of a conversation between Jay-Z and Kevin Hart. It went viral a while ago, but essentially Jay-Z was opining about how when you have become the quote-unquote successful person in your family, you grow every year, you develop every year, and oftentimes you go back to your family and you're talking to people who basically might be having the same mindset they had when they were 16.
Yeah.
And you go home looking for solace. You want your family to basically just love you for who you are.
Yeah.
And then you've got your cousin saying, yo man, like, can you give me $4,000? I got a flip that's going to work.
Capitalism, baby.
If you give me $4,000, I can turn this into $2 million. And then Jay-Z saying, listen, you got to explain to your cousin. That's not how the world works. You know what? If it's too good to be true, it's whatever, whatever. Now to me, the clip was incredibly mundane. nothing that was said was controversial. Yeah. But I think because we live in such a world where there's income inequality, where, you know, it's a cost of living crisis, rich people discussing rich people's problems, people are going to hate it. They're just,
Jay-Z's go watch something else then. Go watch something else. I'm sorry. Change the channel. You don't see me out here hating on Love Island. Like, I just don't watch it.
But you know what? People hate Jay-Z now because of the NFL deal. Because of the NFL deal. We live in an eat the rich era. Full stop. So, okay, I respect that, right?
But it's so fake because as soon as people are rich, then they're just going to like...
Bye-bye.
Anyway.
Yeah, they're going to live their best life as soon as they are rich. And then two, they love the fact that the NFL on the Super Bowl, they got Usher lined up now. They've had Rihanna. Mm. They've had this. And it's all because Jay-Z has managed to get, you know, these artists to agree to come on the thing. So you love the spoils of Jay-Z's work, but you hate the fact that he's working with this organization. Make your mind up. If you are genuinely principled and you don't like the fact that Jay-Z's working with the NFL, okay, don't watch the Super Bowl. Do not tweet about Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg and Kendrick Lamar at the Super Bowl. I don't want to hear it. Like, I respect the person who's like, I don't fuck with this. I'm not consuming this content. What I don't respect are you tap dancing on Twitter for the same things that you claim that you hate. But anyways, on the podcast that I was on yesterday as part of my tour, we talked about this specific incident. And I think the problem is that like this conversation used to be in a rich person's membership club. You would have these sort of conversations.
Right. In a room, yes.
Talking to your other rich
friends. That's true. Or over dinner or something. Dinner, yes.
We were never privy to rich people's problems like this, but now everything is content. Everything has to be content. Kevin Hart has to produce content talking to his rich buddies about how terrible it is, how your broke family members want money from you, basically, right? Yeah. That shouldn't be for the internet. And I think that is the problem.
Greed. Is it greed? Because like at the end of the day, like, do you need to do a podcast to your rich friends that everyone can access? Just send them a freaking voice note. I don't care. Like,
exactly. And Kevin,
closed community. Yep. You don't need to be monetizing the conversation you have with Jay-Z just because you can. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. That literally needs to be the motto of the 2020s, and especially in the age of the internet, especially in the age of content creation. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. And in fact, 99% of the times, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
You just shouldn't.
So I feel like that motto should have been reverberating around the Lululemon headquarters a couple of years ago when they decided to buy a startup called Mirror.
I was for that.
$1 million.
I was for that. No lie. I was for that acquisition. You know I was. Listen back. I wanted one of those things.
So, okay. We're going to have to put this down in the long list of Abedessi's predictions. It worked out. Like, I can't even remember the other ones. What was the?
I'm
was
good for prediction? Some Clubhouse.
Clubhouse is a great investment. I don't know. I can't remember the other ones, but there's been a few that have been, you know, they've been a success. But anyways, Lululemon has shut down Mirror. They haven't even sold it on. They just said we're going to put that down as a write-off. It's a $500 million investment that's gone to zero. Mirror was a home workout device. It looked like a mirror that you would have in your home, and then it would have superimposed on it workouts that you could do. Mm-hmm. So I definitely believe that is the future of somebody will develop a product like
and
that.
There are competitors. There's a German-based company doing the same thing.
Yes. But obviously during lockdown, during COVID, everyone believed that's it. We're never going back out of our houses. It's the new normal. Everyone's working out from home.
Yeah.
Everyone is working from home. Everyone is like ordering takeaway and eating from home constantly. Bye-bye gyms, bye-bye work offices, bye-bye restaurants, basically. Obviously, that hypothesis proved to be completely wrong. And Lululemon, a company who is not a tech company, you make very expensive, you know, overpriced yoga clothing, yeah? Mm. You got caught in the hype, and now you've lost 500 mil. And they are partnering with Peloton to help provide the content. They say, listen, we can't do this in-house. We're going to have to partner with another kind of struggling company here, Peloton, and they can provide us with content and subscription revenue going forward.
Yeah.
Why is it that CEOs are so silly? Like, what's going on here? What's your thoughts about this?
You're a CEO. You're silly. Do you know what it is? None of us can predict the future. And anyone that pretends they can is lying to you. And that's it. So the reality is we make decisions in the present moment that make sense based on trends that we're observing in the present moment. I studied economics, right? Is economics an art, a science? Bullshit. Who knows?
Yeah.
The jury's still out.
Facts.
But especially with everything happening with inflation now. But anyway, back to the question you asked me, why do CEOs make silly decisions? all you can do is make the smartest decision with the information you have available at the time. And they are not the only company that thought people were going to be staying at home. They're not the only company that thought that. Look at the rise and fall of so many other streaming companies. Even Peloton had to do layoffs. There was a time when everyone thought Peloton was going to, you know, take over. Streaming companies are scrambling and struggling. There was a time when everyone thought like, oh, I'm never going to the movies. I'm never doing this. So, you know, things just change. You know, we couldn't have predicted what would have happened after. We couldn't have predicted the fact that people would be desperate to go out. We also couldn't have predicted the fact that at the end of the day, group accountability is what helps us actually get off the couch and work out. And people need a class to do that or a trainer to do that. And a digital product can't replace it. I think we also can't predict the speed with which technology will advance. A lot of these technological advances in tech were about using AI to track movements. It's not quite there yet. Like the sensors, the prediction, it can't detect dark skin, this, that, and the other. Like, you know, it was supposed to be that as you were working out, it would correct you. It would do this. It would do that. The tech's not there yet. So the premise didn't live up to the expectation put out in consumers' mind. And with that price tag, like I told you, I was thinking of investing in one of these things. And it's like, it's a multi-thousand dollar investment. So you're giving up years of a gym subscription to justify that price. And it's like, can you really say that this is going to be as good as the next X years of gym, spin, Pilates, bar? No. So I don't know. I don't think CEOs make silly decisions. I think CEOs, like all of us, are operating at a point in time with a number of different variables and constraints. And hey, we're just doing our best out here. We're just doing our best out here.
That's it for this week's Techish. We hope you enjoyed. What do you think? Let us know. Reach out on @TechishPod on all socials. Tune back in next week to hear Michael and Abidesi break down the latest tech and culture headlines. And if you haven't already, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and a rating on Spotify. It really helps others find the podcast. See you next week. Peace.